Welcome to the Longest Stride podcast. Each week, we bring you engaging conversations with the global running community. We interview community builders and leaders and the incredible runners who inspire us all. We're by runners for runners. And now, here's your hosts, Jonathan Greenwald and Andre Morgan.
Welcome to the Longest Stride podcast, where we dive into the sport of running. Our guest today has made the transition from recreational running to becoming a Canadian Olympian. She's competed at the highest level, simultaneously a registered dietitian. All this while a mother of three beautiful children. Let's have her tell her story and most recent accomplishment. Please welcome Krista Duchesne.
Thank you.
Hi, welcome.
How are you?
Good. Thanks for legitimizing our podcast. Appreciate it.
It's a check mark. You'll probably hear the nervous in my voice.
You did great, Trey. This is good. Yeah, I mean, fresh off a Canadian record and all exciting times. Clearly what we want to talk about, but we're gonna dial it back a little bit, and let's bring it back to maybe second grade, third, no. Let's talk about, you know, Krista, I think a lot of our listeners probably know so much about you. Dre and I know a lot about you. It's not about that. It's about really getting an appreciation for kind of how far you've really come. So, and I know Dre mentioned at the top in the intro about being a recreational runner. Like, what does that mean, recreational runner? Like, what was running like for you growing up?
Well, I was the second youngest of six kids, and actually my mom used to say that I was the most energetic, and when I was too wound up in the house, she used to lock me out and make me run laps around the house until I was allowed to come back in once I wore off some energy. And I remember I loved it because she'd lock me out, and it was all fun. I mean, oh, what a punishment. I had to run around my house. But there was one time I was in my bare feet and I like scuffed my toe really bad, and it was like bleeding and gravel in it. And I was at the window, I'm like laughing, I'm still hyper. And I'm like, Mom, you got to let me back in. And she's like, no, two more laps. So I had to lift up my toe, my foot, and show her through the window, and she let me back in. So yeah, I always had a lot of energy, loved helping my dad on the farm. We had cattle. So I would be doing chores with him and just, you know, preferred to be outside as opposed to being inside. And yeah, when I went to elementary school, I loved doing every sport I could do and really loved the track and field day. So that's probably where I first had a passion for running. And I also played hockey, started at the age of four. And back in the day, it was like girls playing with the boys. So yeah, just loved every sport I could.
Yeah, and I'm sure that wasn't a punishment. It was more like just burn off that energy and come back inside.
Yeah, exactly.
Nice. So when did it start getting serious for you?
So I did pretty well in elementary school and high school. Like in high school, I think I made OFSA maybe 4 out of the 5 years that I competed. And I wasn't like the top. I never got a medal, but to make it was good. And I either did like the 800 or the 3000, usually because it would depend on the year. And like, because I wasn't super strong compared to the other runners, we kind of picked it based on the year and who was doing the other distances. So I really liked it, and then enjoyed doing cross country as well. Probably did a bit better in cross country, I guess, than track, but just loved it. And then, so at the end of high school, I had to choose between hockey and running. And at the time I was more passionate about hockey. So I went to University of Guelph, got my degree in nutrition, and played hockey, and then I ran on the side. And actually, when I played hockey and was trying out, we did dryland training, and it was like, oh, who's this new girl who's like super good runner? So they called me track star, and then I made the hockey team. Oh. And loved doing the dryland training of running because I love that as well. So yeah, it wasn't until I graduated from Guelph, you know, retired from hockey after 4 successful years, that I got back into running just recreational. I remember one day I did about 18K and I was like, oh, I should try a marathon. So then the next year I did a marathon. It was just for fun, just like bucket list item. And then, you know, it's all history from there.
Yeah, that's so interesting that you chose another sport because of just the love of it. But the untapped potential that you had within that sport wasn't showcased until you came on land with it, obviously. And that sets up so much of an actual story for us, because we like to ask these questions just to see if what you did in other sports was cross-training that made you who you are today. And we're just now seeing that with a trend where like Reed used to skateboard. Quite a few people skateboarded, but I think even just now hockey, it's a little bit new to us, but just the endurance of it, I assume, built you up to have that resilience to then do a marathon and take it on. And then when did you realize that you're good at it more than the average after you've left hockey?
So after I did my first marathon, you know, like many people while I was running it, I was telling myself, like, what are you doing? This is so hard. And then, you know, you cross the line and you're like, okay, I want to sign up for the next one. So I just kept taking chunks of time off every time I did a marathon. And I just loved it. I loved the training. And I just kind of figured, okay, I can probably go a little bit faster each time. And it was probably in about 2009 that I kind of thought I could take it to the next level. And a lot of that was my husband's idea, just kind of saying, hey, you know, we want to have kids. We want you to stay home with them, you know, work as a dietitian on the side. And, you know, you can run pushing the kids, go to the gym, there's childcare. So that's when I applied for sponsorship and I got my first coach, Nicole Stevenson, and just kept, you know, training, enjoying it, and just, you know, going a little bit more in terms of mileage each week. And, you know, the depth of the workouts got more intense, and it just kind of picked up year after year. So in 2010, I won my first national championship. By that point, I had taken almost an hour off my time because I think I was 2:39. And I knew, I felt at that point like I was still just getting started.
Oh, wow. So the marathon distance was always the distance for you, right? I mean, I know you said 800s, 3000s, but like once you fell into that groove and you got over that initial, yeah, this is hard, that was your sweet spot, right? That's what you really enjoyed.
Yeah. And I mean, when you're young and you're doing track, 3000 is the marathon of the track, right? That is the longest distance. So I would do 5 and 10K road races in the Sarnia Lambton area where I lived. And I enjoyed those. And then cross country would be a bit further. But I think I did a 3000 meter back in like 2015 or 14. I don't even remember. I have not. That's the only race I've done on the track, I think, since graduating from high school. So I've not even done a 10,000 meter on the track. I mean, I've done lots of 5 and 10Ks on the road, but I've only used the track for workouts, like basically in the last 20 years, which is fine.
Well, evidently it's fine. There are like traditional things that individuals do that you're supposed to fit a mold and follow it, and it was supposed to work like that. An example would have been people that have done an ultra marathon before they even did a marathon, you know, and you're just supposed to not do that. But I think here's an example of something where you didn't follow the typical route, even though OFSA and a few of those key events, you know, you check those off the box. Yeah, explain World Athletics Championship 2013 to us.
Oh, that was a nasty day. I was fit. I was, you know, coming off of, you know, a good season in 2012, where both Landy Marchant and I went to Rotterdam to try to qualify for the 2012 Olympics and ran 2:32, which at the time was a 7-minute PB. And so we went to Russia to run there, and it was the race was at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. There was a heat wave, and I didn't finish. And it was almost like a half of the field or a third of the field that didn't finish that day. So yeah, really disappointing. But you know, like all of these, you know, ups and downs, so to speak. I knew that, you know, I was still in the thick of it, and it wouldn't be the end. Like I'd come back fighting stronger because of it.
Yeah, and the only reason I brought it up is not to put a point on it, but I knew you would have had something inspirational to say about what it's like to just be in something you've trained so long for and still come out of it with a positive attitude, regardless of what the weather was like or, you know, other people that didn't finish, but you got to the actual event itself. So even that's a big accomplishment. But I just wanted to hear your take on something that, you know, might have just went partial.
Yeah. And I mean, one thing from that is that if I have a race that I'm disappointed with, I look at what went wrong. We didn't adjust our pace according to the heat, and you know, you live and learn. And then it was that October that I went back and tried to get the Canadian record, and so did Lanny. And you know, we both beat the existing record. She obviously got it ahead of me, but you know, you can draw on those disappointments to kind of fuel the fire for the next one. So I guess we kind of redeemed ourselves, because Lanny also, you know, she also had a disappointing experience in Russia. So it was kind of neat for us to be like, yeah, we're here, we're strong, and you know, we've got more coming.
So you turn that setback a few years later into representing Canada on the world stage. So, you know, I know you spoke openly in the past about Rotterdam and, you know, situation happened there, but, you know, after your first go at Rotterdam, you went back, qualified, and actually got to participate Canada at Rio. So again, you know, just talks about perseverance and personality and not letting, you look at a marathon isn't like 2-3 weeks running out on the road and you're done. It's a commitment that's probably many, many months, especially for someone competing at your level, Krista. So when you do all that and it doesn't work out, it's so easy to just pack your bags and say, you know what, I'm just going to go back and just do whatever, because this is not worth it. But no, you go back at it, you take another crack at a race, and next thing you know, you're representing Canada. So what's that thought process and what's kind of going through your head where you're like, I'm going to go at it again? And then when you finally realize, okay, I've accomplished this.
Well, I think with every build, you gain something. You get stronger mentally, physically, whatever it is. And so you can benefit from that. Even if the race doesn't work out the way you wanted, you can still look at the build and say, okay, I wasn't able to prove my fitness and how good I was, I guess. But you can use that for the next one. And I think of in 2017, I spent a month in Kenya training at altitude. Then I went to run the London Marathon, had stomach issues. And that, to this day, is like my worst marathon ever. Like, most disappointing. I was super fit. I was going to try to beat Lanny's record. And so I walked away from that like, oh, that really stinks. You know, everything was lined up perfectly. But I look back on that like, okay, I had a great build. I did my highest mileage ever. And at altitude, I was with a new coach. I was, you know, I was still learning and gaining. So then 2018 is when Boston came around. So that definitely, you know, was on the up again.
Yeah. And for who don't know, Boston 2018, you podium. So that in itself was, it's almost like you've been working on that for years, but may not knew that you were working towards that. As you said, you come out of every cycle a bit better, and it made you podium for Boston, obviously, because you might have done so well in London, but not necessarily recover to a point where you needed to make Boston, you know, a world major marathon like that podium. You could give us some highlights from that race.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, my training was going really well, great fitness, and you know, that particular winter and spring, it was nasty. It was cold and rainy. And, you know, with three kids and part-time job, I can't just pick and choose what days I'm going to do my workout. So I remember going out like, oh, this is super windy. And so your times are slower, but you just think, okay, this is all by effort. And okay, it's rainy today. You know, maybe I'll just do it later, but that's not an option. So, you know, when it came to Boston and I was lined up against maybe some people who didn't train in those conditions or who could pick the better weather day, I'm lined up going, okay, this is the way it is, and they're not going to like it, but I'm actually used to this. So it definitely worked to my advantage. And, you know, I lined up with them. I'm riding beside like Shalane Flanagan and Edna Kiplagat, Molly Huddle, and thinking I do not belong here, but, you know, I passed them in the end because that was just my day. And I think the neat thing is to train and compete where you expect the unexpected. Like, never think that something couldn't happen. I know statistically and the odds weren't for me on a good day. I wasn't faster than them, but I was stronger on the day that the weather was miserable for them.
Yeah, I just, what I love is, and I know it's hindsight, but like after the race, everyone was saying that Krista was probably one of the most prepared for that race. And you touched on it. How many times, Dre, did we go out like, ah, it's raining. Oh, it's cloudy. I don't know. Yep. Oh, it's a little hot. Oh, I don't know. It's, you know, it's cold. It's snowing. Boston seen snow before in the past. Boston's like, I ran with, you know, I didn't run with you. I was a little bit behind you, Krista, but I remember getting off the bus and walking through the mud in Athletes Village and thinking, how are we going to do this? And then as you're running down, like I was running with my Parker for a little bit, it was so windy that everything was just like, it was insane. When you mentioned like Shalane and Dez and all those athletes, and doesn't matter what level, you know, everyone is on it, you know, at a certain point of their life, there's more, it's more than just how far, you know, how fast your feet can move you. It's more than just nutrition. It's more than training. It's more than like elements play a big role in this, and mindset plays a big role in this. And you know, if you're thinking this is nothing, I got this, then you're probably going to get it, right? And that's not to say that other people's mindset kind of wasn't in there, but when you're training this stuff, you probably, you know, saw the rain coming down. You're like, oh, that's just another Tuesday or Monday for me.
Yeah. And it was about being sensible and like having kind of common sense, where I remember thinking, just like you, I was going through these puddles and I got on the bus and my feet were wet all the way through. Well, I had packed extra socks and shoes so that I could trade. So then when I rode the bus, I put my socks on the heater and they dried out. So when I got there, again, I walked inside, they got wet. I kept switching back and forth. And we were in that little church where we wait before we start. And I put my socks on the heater there because I knew you cannot get on the start line where you're already cold and wet and shaking. And that didn't happen to me. So I wore layers to do my warm up and then, you know, got to the line and felt fine when I started.
Yeah, and it speaks volume to the other bit that you're Canadian, because with the weather itself, that's something I have to deal with over time. And obviously everyone has to deal with weather, but I think the true grit of training in a colder climate prepared you for that as well. I had some factor to do with that. I noticed obviously everyone moved south and they would go to Flagstaff and get the altitude. And maybe Boston's secret is to train in the cold, right? We're probably giving away too much right now, but it might be a different approach. Maybe no one has looked at it in that sense. But again, I'm just trying to find connections within things. I did say in a CBC interview that when you go out on a marathon, you would like not think about anything. Like, I don't know how to do that, but that I'm so key to try to figure out how that works.
Yeah, it's actually something that I've done, I mean, for a long time. And I remember it's something also that Wesley Carrier's coach told him to do. And it's like, don't think about anything until you have to. So just kind of let your mind wander, pay attention to your bottles and gels and kind of the logistics of the race and, you know, somewhat to how your pace is going. But you want to wait until you need to think about something to push you. And then that's when you dig for those things. And I mean, just with this 50K I did last week, it was this trip to Booster Juice that was in my head and that my daughter and I had talked about. And like, you know, what a crazy thing, right? But I'm like, that's just what stuck in my head because we were going to go on the way home and we had talked about it. And you don't know what it's going to be. Sometimes it's like something that someone has said before and it's just in my head. But yeah, it seems to work, because if you're at 10K into a marathon and you're already starting to, you know, get your mind thinking and focusing, it's like, whoa, that's too much energy too soon.
That's such a key tip. yeah, I had to ask about that.
That's something I'll never be able to figure out. It's I'm usually 10K in and I'm like, in Boston, I'm running. I'm like, is that guy drinking a beer? It's like 10 o'clock. What is happening here? Because basically, even when it was raining that day, I just remember there were people under tents and there were people like with umbrellas drinking beers. And I said, wow, is that? Yeah. So that's where my head was at.
But it's almost like being distracted. So that
yeah,
helps, right?
For sure.
But it's so interesting to get into that, because he did say earlier, Jonathan, that, you know, it takes a mindset too as well to endure some of these distances and the time that you have to kill. But just the approach that you take, Krista, about is just not thinking about anything. Or if you do think about something, it's almost like your metronome. It becomes this, it might not make any sense, but you're just like, well, this is what's keeping me going. And I guess you don't game yourself to then become mentally strained. And then you know, with any ultra, they talk about people getting very woozy because they're constantly thinking so hard, and then they start get delusional actually because of the constant changing of the course, but just even out there where it's just running for that long. But that's a very, very interesting thing. I just wanted to dive into that. But let's talk about your 50K.
Before we get into that, real quick, what I want to, maybe if you could set us up. So you run Boston since 2018. No one knew that there was going to be a pandemic that was, approaching. But what was the plan after Boston? Like, did you have something else lined up that you were training for?
So I did Boston again in 2019, and it's interesting because, you know, we've just talked about preparing ourselves, and that particular year was the opposite. It was hot and humid. And I remember, you know, finding that out like an hour before the race, what exactly the humidity was. And I just was like, it's not happening. I knew it was the opposite of the year before. I was not prepared for that, just like everyone wasn't prepared for the year before. And so I knew it was going to stink, and it did. You take it as a good opportunity. My family was there, and you know, when I crossed the line, I'm kind of doing this like, well, I made it. And some, one of them, I think maybe my husband, said, well, we've been having a good weekend. It's like, well, okay. So I was to go back again in 2020 to do Boston, and obviously that's when everything got shut down.
Yeah, I remember. So this is, again, it's your story, not mine, but I ran 2019 as well. And I remember the bus ride to Athletes Village, and it started raining again. And I'm like, it was actually drizzling when we got onto the buses. I'm like, here we go again. And then we, Athletes Village, it's drizzling. We're waiting. Okay, whatever. And then we go to start, and it rained for maybe 3 or 4 kilometers, maybe. And next thing you know, the sky opens up, sunny, and I'm like dying of heat after like 10 kilometers. And it was so unbelievably hot and humid and sticky and messy. And that was a very, very, very tough race. So yeah, you're absolutely right. And then you probably see the elites who were expected to do really well that in 2018, probably crush it in 2019 because that's what they train in. So it's, again, it's like to what you said, being prepared. Yeah.
Which is an interesting connection with what we're going to talk about next, the 50K. So yeah, we had to delay our date for the 50K. We all knew that it would likely be warm. And, you know, Reed kind of said, like, we'll give it 2 weeks, but we probably won't be able to do it at a later date because we'll be guaranteed heat. So sure enough, last Friday, it was hot and humid. And here we are today. It was like cool and breezy. And so anyways, going into it, the week of the race, I actually thought, okay, I have to be prepared for this. So I was wearing layers on my run. Now, I wasn't like cooking myself and like overdoing it, but I basically, through the spring, my friend Dale had said, okay, if it's in May, you need to prepare for what could be heat and humidity. So I, as the weather got better this spring, I kept the layers on. And then during the week of the race, a couple of times, I think just Monday, Tuesday, I ran around noon. And this is what I did for Rio when I was getting to ready to run at the Olympics that was going to be hot and humid. So I ran around noon, kept all my layers on, and then kept the layers on just for like Wednesday, Thursday, but didn't run at noon. Then the other thing I did, we have a swim spa, which is basically like a big hot tub that can also be cooled down and used like a small pool. So I came back. I had been using it all season at about 101 for about 15 to 30 minutes, just doing core and exercises. So I kept doing that. But like the Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, I did it a little bit warmer for like maybe 20 minutes and sat there. And like, you know, I was a little bit like woozy, but not to the point where it's like, I'm going to take a risk for Friday. So anyways, I did kind of this little heat training. And I really do think that helped on Friday when I ran in Hamilton and got the 50K record, as well as like making sure I was drinking my fluids. And Reed had a table set up with bottles they dunked on my head every single time. And then Mike Gill had baggies of ice that I stuck in the back. And that, I didn't run fast, but I was consistent with my pacing.
Yeah. So spoiler alert, you broke the record. So let's back up a little bit. Let's talk about preparedness.
Yeah, I never even thought that little tip there about just because you're conditioning your body thermally. It's almost like you're doing a thermal cycle, but it would have been similar to the fact that you would have did your training in a temperature controlled environment. but you were building up yourself to be in a warmer climate, knowing that you're going to go. And as you said, you took on a similar approach to Rio. And then the fact that you applied it for this is like, it made so much sense. So there's so much factors that I wouldn't have thought of. It's like, oh, today we just run, we run. So you've been planning Boston. So Boston didn't happen. And you're like, maybe I should do a 50. What was the thought process behind that?
So I think it was my idea, actually, where I told Reed that it would be fun to do a 50K. And he thought, okay, it would be best if you did it on the trails, like a ultra on the trails. So we did in November, it ended up being 54K, but that was kind of my first ultra experience. So it wasn't an official race, but a group in Oakville let me kind of tag along, and it was, you know, physically distanced. And, you know, I think there was less than 10 of us doing that race that day. And so that kind of gave me the confidence going into the road 50K that, you know, I have run for a long time for a long distance. So I kind of wasn't, the idea of doing 50K wasn't daunting or, you know, scary for me because of my trail experience back in November. And then, you know, during the pandemic, like from the spring into the fall, I did a few time trials just to kind of, you know, have something on the calendar to keep me motivated with training.
You just brought something to mind that I was curious about. So you did the 54. I remember that. I remember that. It was great. And Reed is a trail guy. Reed like crushes it through those trails out there. So that was a really good suggestion. I just thought about something. So training in trails, you've been running through a lot of trails leading up to this. The Canadian record, or even when Des kind of did her record, just to briefly mention the one she did a few months ago, is there a trail and a road record for the 50K?
No, I believe that it's all the same. So obviously, if you want the record, you're going to do it on the road, and you're not going to do it on trails with like single track and rocks and hills and that kind of thing.
Yeah, it's probably hard to determine what's a trail measurement properly, because when trail changes elevation, the distance is all over the place. So it's very, very hard. But I know exactly what you're saying. Maybe the FKT would have been more something like, okay, you have to be at this place to do it on this particular trail for it to be a fastest known time. But that's an interesting point there, JG, because you know, you could have chose a rail path that would have given you the distance downhill. You know, it's like, and just go one way. And that obviously would have given you an advantage, but doing it on the road, it makes it fair right across the board. But you know, without everything that's been said, you know, we don't just want to glance over this, because the accomplishment is, it sounds easy because you do a marathon and you do a marathon at an Olympic pace. Now, to do 7 more K, it's like, oh, well, I'll just add 7 more K on it. But it goes beyond that because it's an ultra. And it was 5K loops, right? So it's like 10 5K loops. So the actual course is measured, officiated. So it's not like you could just make up something and go on. So these are the details that we want to pull out to make sure that someone understands what it takes to even do something like this. It's not you just got up and did it. So in terms of planning from when you made the decision in your mind, how did your training change to fit to that new goal?
Yeah, so last December, it was Reed who came up with the idea of going after the 50K road record. And I was like, oh, I love it. That's great. And so in that, he said, okay, we'll make sure that it's going to count. We'll make sure it's on a certified course. So he went out and got the course measured and got it sanctioned and, you know, to make it official. So, and then, you know, he was building my training program. And it wasn't that much different than marathon training. It's not quite as intense because you are running a bit slower, but you do need that mental strength knowing like another 7.8 kilometers when, you know, you want to be done at the end of the marathon is key. So I knew that would be good for me. And I think it was about 5 seconds slower per kilometer that our pacing was. So yeah, it went really well. The mileage was probably pretty similar to what I did when I was training for marathons. And I didn't find it intense. And I didn't have those days where I was really tired and exhausted, like maybe with marathon training.
So I know there's a lot of similarities. And I know part of it's like, well, it's just another 7.5K, whatever extra. But Does that change your nutrition and your fueling? Like, do you have to adapt that? So it's usually like, well, I'd have a table set up at X distance or something. How does that work with the 50K?
So I did it just the same as marathon training, where I practiced in my training with the same concentration that I'm used to with my Elo drink and then my Durance Tap gel. So I alternate between the two and I just added extra bottles and gels. Now, where it was different this time, because I did have stomach problems, is because of the heat and humidity. So I think just because that was such a factor that at like 36K, I like literally stopped and threw up. And I think it was my body just saying, look, I'm working to try to keep you cool. I can't be digesting this stuff at the same rate that you're used to. So I think because I'm good at, you know, getting my glycogen stores up with carb loading and what I had taken in leading up to that point, funny enough, I was able to like start running again. I was back to the original pace and actually finished a little bit stronger. So yeah, so basically the same nutrition plan, but it was the heat and humidity that was the factor.
Time out. You stopped.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Stopped. Full stop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Threw up.
Yeah.
And then continued to run. Okay. Let's double click on that for a bit. Okay. For a second here. How long did you stop for?
As long as it took to like completely empty my stomach. And I will say too, we won't give details. I had to make a few other bush stops before that. So I actually had stomach problems for like most of the race, to be honest. Yeah. So it's a humbling sport.
Yeah. Yeah. Pace was still on point. The splits were still like accurate, as in like they weren't off. They're consistent, I should say. And, you know, you made up for whatever time you thought you missed. But it's such an amazing feat to even watch parts of it happen, because there at no point you didn't look like you wavered. You know, after a while, you know, your stride changes or you start hearing your feet kind of drag. None of that was going on. But that's why I wanted to get into what you were thinking while you were running. You're just doing it. And the other caveat to this was there were people on the path. So you could do a straight line, right? And you want to do a straight line, but that person's walking your dog. And so you're adding more fatigue into like just running your race. So I think that needs to be said. There's an extra, you probably could have done it faster without navigating around people and your dogs. But
Trey, did anyone with their dog passing by say, ma'am, are you okay?
There was one time where this couple was walking their baby in a stroller and I'm like, I am so sorry. And the guy's like, I've been there. I get it. I totally understand. And I mean, it's funny. Well, it's not funny, like what happened to me in London, because London, I had stomach problems. I mean, I've done 19 marathons and I've only had one marathon where the stomach problems like took me out. So it was a nasty finish. Like I basically jogged the rest and that seemed to take hours. So this time was like completely opposite. I thought, like, you know, Dre said, I would start to kind of slow down and waver. And I was just like, okay, I'm not going to collapse and make this ugly, like my experience in Russia. I knew if I started to get like these feelings of overheating and just being cooked and done, then I would call it and that would stink. But my body just kind of kicked into, it was almost like I had it all in my system. And yeah, I mean, it's a mystery. Trent Stellingworth, he's a physiologist, and I'm sure I have yet to email him and I'll probably be like, hey, can you explain this? And I mean, the great thing with him is he explains the science, but he also can say, hey, sometimes we just don't know why these things happen. And it worked in my favor.
I'll tell you what it was, Krista. It was your stomach saying, I need more room for booster juice.
That's literally what it was.
That's remarkable. Okay. What's the mindset? Okay. So that happens. And again, we're talking about perseverance. We're talking about, you know, what's happened in previous races. Ondan, you definitely recall just now. What's the mindset when that happens? Do you think, okay, on a scale of 1 to 10, this is probably not bad. It's probably a 2 or 3. I'm going to push on. Do you start recalculating everything? Or like, if I have to make up time, because you probably had a goal time, obviously, because you're trying to break a record. Do you start recalculating in your head how to make up time? Or do you just say, nah, I'm just going to run my race and whatever happens?
Well, I think after I was sick, I just thought, okay, I'll just jog and see how I feel. But I just got right back to that pace, and Rob was there pacing. And I think he was kind of surprised how well it went. So because I got back on pace, I was like, okay, I'm good. Now, I think I was initially prepared to have to slow down and kind of do the math when I was running to know, okay, what can I slow down to and still get the record? So when I reached the start finish where it was my last turnaround for the final 10, I told Reed, I'm like, I was totally sick. And he's like, yeah, I heard, it's okay, you're on pace. But he didn't want to push us in the heat. Like, he did say that after the race. He's like, yeah, like, as race director, I'm not going to push people to go past their limit given the conditions. So he was just kind of objective, like kind of gave me the numbers, like, you're still okay. And because I was feeling good, I just kept running. And yeah, so, you know, looking back, it's a surprise that the end ended up as good as it did. But like I said, I've also had it the other way, where it's super disappointing and you're much slower than what you expect to be.
Yeah, and he might have had a internal conflict there, knowing that he wanted to see you finish it, and at the same time wanted to be safer, just, you know, overall, because there's some things he can't hide. So if your face looks like, hey, I'm about to, like, you know, change color right now, so he would have called it too as well. But I feel like, coming from this and seeing parts of it, you had experience. And I think experience just overtrumped everything. And also the fact that you're a dietitian, you're like, oh yeah, this is what's going on. It's not that serious. Being able to manage even how your bottles were lined up, just those little, like, they're tacit knowledge. You have to kind of be there and touch them to know that this is a thing. I had no idea that was a thing. So just based on how many, as you said, you drink that you take in versus what you do for tap. And I'm sure every other person might be different. So you haven't changed that. That has been your program forever and still had stomach issues. So obviously you mentioned it might be because of the temperature change, which you can't really account for. One thing I want to mention is that with the virtual stuff, or even having an officiated course and being able to kind of set up when you want it, you could have watched the weather and then go then when the weather is nice. So, and you didn't do that. It was just like, it was a race day and it was a race day. So kudos to you.
Yeah. And you just have to go with it. And I think, you know, I have several years of experience, I guess, at running these long distances. And also, like we talked about before, when I had my first coach, and then, you know, I've had a couple different coaches over the last 20 years. And honestly, Reed's coaching is the best in that, like, the workouts are good, the volume and that kind of thing, but it's the big picture that he puts together. And, you know, even though I'm 44, I still know that he expects not more out of me, like as in personal bests, but he doesn't think, oh, well, you're a master's runner, you're probably peaked. We set reasonable goals together. And just like with the strength and with the strides and all of these things that he has in that week, you know, there's a complete trust. And so it's just exciting that at this age and this many years into the sport, I still feel like I'm learning and getting better in those other little areas. So I've kind of got the nutrition, you know, worked out, but it's exciting to have him and the plan and what's new for me in that sense.
And Reed has been around the block a few times, like his experience in the world stage and just, you know, even Canada, like crushing races. So it's amazing how some athletes can spin it around and say, okay, I'm going to take kind of what I've learned throughout my life as a runner and then be able to put that coaching spin on it. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know how many people in the world could do that, but Reed is clearly one of them. And kudos to that relationship, because it seems like it's really doing wonders.
Yeah, it's really good.
Yeah, and then you mentioned even just being a master's and stuff like that. I don't see that ever doing anything different, because if we were to compare apples to apples, from what you've done for 50K at the age you're in, it's amazing. So it's not just that, oh, you broke the record and it's it, but the numbers don't lie, because, you know, not to bring up Des or anything like that, She's 32. And the difference in time, I think, is maybe like 20 minutes. So, and then you're saying you feel like there's more from you. So it's the world stage at this point. So it's not necessarily, it might seem daunting, but in reality, numbers don't lie. And then if we were to bring these closer together, you know, then it's a bigger feat, I think.
Still a ridiculous accomplishment.
And I think a neat thing too is I was asked by our local reporter, do you think that your record will be beat? You know, it's not quite as fast as you could have run. And I said, well, yeah, like it's not a super fast time, especially compared to Dez's. But the thing is with 50Ks, there's no 50Ks. Like maybe we'll start to see more and I would love that. So part of me is like, yeah, I'd love to do that all over again and train for the 50K and run at the pace that I know I'm capable of running. And, you know, maybe it will be at an official race that's done like in April where you're not, you know, expected to get those conditions.
I know someone that could beat that record. You.
Yeah.
Next time. The next time you go out there, you're like, no boosted juice. I'm just going. And like, no, for sure. Like, think about it for real. You've got the experience. You got the course. You got the experience. You know what to do. You know, next time Mother Nature will cooperate a little bit. And yeah, I mean, okay, let me ask the question. Would you do it again?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's neat that, you know, I feel like I'm just getting started at the 50Ks. And, you know, another big part of that was, you know, with the pandemic, you know, everyone's at home and it was exciting to train for. I had my normal routine and, you know, we're not getting out. Every kid's doing school, you know, at home. And it was really special bond with my daughter and I. Like, she loves running and, you know, she's not super competitive or doing races. So obviously nothing's going on, but like, you know, just kind of see that in her. And she kind of reminds me of Melissa Bishop. I don't put the pressure on her and I don't really say that to her, but it's just really neat how you see that passion in her. And I think it's going to be, you know, a delicate balance between like pushing her and training when she gets older and just like riding it out and having a long season and whatever. But like that day was particularly special because she went with my friend Tina, who's also a runner, and she volunteered at the aid station. And, you know, I just want to be a good role model for these young girls, especially my daughter, to be like, you know, work hard for something. You'll be challenged. It's fun. Stay in sport, all these things that can help keep girls in sport. And so, I mean, I was surprised. She got a ride to the finish with some other friends that were there and she was bawling. And I couldn't believe it. I'm like, this was our special day. And like that little simple thing is a booster juice. We had talked about going to Booster Juice on the way home after this race. And here we are, like, you know, I've traveled all over the world to race in big events. And sometimes it comes down to those simple things that motivate you and push you to be your best and create those memories and how I can be that to my daughter and other girls with coaching hockey and everything else. Like that, those things excite me and motivate me.
What an experience for both of you. Oh my goodness. That's so special that she gets to see you, could just see you do that.
That's well said. Because it does go beyond just what you've done, because now you're mentioning that she's seeing that and she got caught up in it so much. And then that high five at the end, just before the end, you're coming in hot and your daughter's there. I saw that, right? So like, as you said, that was such a special moment for you.
Well, and the funny thing with that high five, like I saw how emotional it was. She was like, bawling. And my mother instinct was like to stop and console her. But then I'm like, wait a minute, let me finish. And she ran to the finish line. And like, there's that picture, Dre, that you took where I'm looking at her in the face and I'm like, we did it, you know? And she's just, the tears are coming down and the mask's on her face, it's on my face. Like, it's so bizarre, like to look back at that and it'll be a memory for life. And like, you know, you hear about kids and stories who become Olympians, and it's those things where it's like they're surrounded in that environment or they're inspired by something or they see something. And I mean, I don't care what she does in terms of whether she runs or not, but it's that memory that we build together that's so special.
The best role models are the ones you kind of grow up with and you share a dinner table with sometimes, because she probably... And she was in Boston in 2018, right? I think
2019.
Yeah. So, 2019. Sorry about that. Yeah. So she would have seen you finish. She would have seen other races. But, you know, when's the last time she got the high five you as you're coming into the finish line, knowing that you're about to break a record that is going to be, everyone's going to be, you're on a podcast, talk about it now, that is going to be like, all over the internet, and you know, all the, you know, media, all the news feeds are going to be talking about it. And you wrote the post on iRun, which was remarkable. So all that starts coming together, and yeah, I mean, you're right. It's, I feel the same way about my son, who used to love running with me, now just couldn't be bothered. But at the same time, like, you never know. One day they might wake up and say, "I remember that moment. I want to relive that moment for myself." So yeah, that was
awesome. And the funny thing is that she was at the Olympics. Like our kids and my husband and my coach and three of my siblings went. She doesn't remember Rio. What she remembers about Rio is going to the Canada House and drinking the pop and the Powerade and the chocolate bars and like running around and like seeing Penny Oleksiak and like Rosie McClellan and all these like, you know, star Olympians. She kind of remembers that fun running around. She doesn't remember the race at all. And it's like,
my mom raised thoughts on that day.
Yeah, you have no idea about the lineage, and it goes without saying that this is history. It's Canadian history being made in a backyard. I said it on one of my photos, and literally, you're running through people's backyard. There was no podium to be had. There was no major crowd or spectators. It was it's for a race for you and your daughter. That's literally what it came down to. Because I'm sure, as you said, when you're doing training, they were right there as well doing homeschooling. So it, as you said, made it more special because there was that like, oh, I'm not even gone anywhere really. So here's the end result of it. But I think later on, it'll dawn on her how important a lot of it is. I'm sure she understands it now, but it's like, it's still not as heavy as she would think off the top.
Yeah. And, you know, another thing that comes to mind is they've seen me in those lows as well, right? So in 2013, when I wanted to break the Canadian record and Lanny did it ahead of me, you know, came home and the kids actually, they said, well, she'll share the money with you, right? Because you broke the record too. And it's like, they just didn't get it. It's like, yeah, no, Lanny gets all of that. And they were just kind of trying to wrap their head around it. And so, you know, that was huge, that race. And I came home, they weren't able to come. And, you know, they can't come to a lot of races. They've got their own activities. And the marathon's not the greatest spectator event, right? You just cross the line and you know, they've been waiting for hours. But I remember one of the first things I did when I got home, and I've told people this, it is I cleaned a toilet. And it's like, here I am. I was in the shape of my life. I get second and I'm cleaning a toilet. Like what just happened in the last like 24 hours? It was just, but I chose that opportunity and Sylvia Ruger was at the finish line. And that's when she said to me, it takes more grace than I can tell to play the second fiddle well. And I asked her to repeat it because I thought this is meaningful. This is going to define me. I can pout and be disappointed that I didn't get that record and that Lanny did, or I can celebrate it and use this as who I am and let it define me. So when I've done talks at schools, most people don't win the race. So I say, you know, I was the first one to lose, right? Technically, but I was my best. That was my day. That was good for me to get second place, and we can be our best, even though that is not the best and you might not win the gold medal. So yeah, you know, so my kids have seen, you know, all sorts of different emotions that have come with the sport.
That's amazing. Eh?
Oh, I can't even speak. Yeah. No, I'm just thinking about this, like the moment and like, you know, just how, oh my goodness. And then cleaning toilets like crazy.
It's just maybe getting out of your mind, catharsis, just get it out. Like, let me just do something else. Like, go back to normal life. You know, it's like, hey, here I was performing on the stage, and then here am I now just like, oh, I'm back to normal. So I guess you just needed to, like, make that connection again, be grounded, I assume, just being grounded.
But you know what? That's an amazing thing about this sport, and a remarkable thing, really, about this sport is, Krista, you're a household name. Like, everyone knows who you are in Canada. Anyone that knows anything about running knows who Krista Duchesne is. And you just break a 50K record and people are like going crazy over it. You come home, you're a mom, you're a dietitian, you're cleaning toilets. Like, your still have, you know, your jobs to do at home and stuff like that. So it's, you know, it's not like, you know, you got this like, I don't know. You're not like living on some like track somewhere on some campus somewhere. And it's like, that's your life. No, your life is like your family and everything else. So it's remarkable that you have these almost two worlds, which are really one world together, and you kind of live in both of these spaces. It's really fascinating to be able to compete at that level you compete, but still like hold it down.
Yep.
And I think one thing that's allowed me to succeed in that is that you have to know the hat you're wearing at the time. So when I'm at home with the kids, you know, especially when they were young, I couldn't be thinking, oh, I wish I was out running with my running group, right? So when I did do that once a week run with my friends, I couldn't think, oh, I should be back at home with my kids and the mom guilt. Like my husband was completely capable to be with my kids. It didn't have to be me all the time. And, you know, there were challenges with, you know, breastfeeding and pumping and all these things that you're doing when they're little, but it's enjoying what you're doing and, you know, appreciating those abilities that go with that.
What's next, Krista? We talked about the, you know, you're going to crack the 50K again. I'm sure you're going to need some time for that, but you know, you're going to go back to that like measly, you know, marathon distance again. That's only 42K or like what's next? What are you thinking?
Yeah, I don't think I'm done yet on the road. Like I've liked the kind of dabbling with the ultra. I mean, an ultra isn't 50. There's, you know, 50 mile or 100K. There's that whole world to experience, which would be cool. But I would like to finish the world majors if I could. I think that would be exciting. And so I have Tokyo, New York City, and Chicago to do. So, you know, hopefully it'll work out that I can do one of those this fall. It will be announced, and I'm really excited about that. And then, yeah, maybe after that, I'll just kind of have fun on the road and focus more on those ultra distances because, like I said, it's almost like this whole new world that I have yet to learn and experience and see what I can do there. So that's pretty exciting.
So, Krista, it's just been wonderful that you gave us the opportunity to interview you on the podcast. And as Jonathan said, make us legitimate. However, you're inspiration to a lot of us. So it goes without saying that we want to really, really, really appreciate you. That we do appreciate you coming on. And we can't wait to speak to you again, period, for your next endeavor. And then when you smash that record as well, too. And yeah, we'll all get together soon. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks.
Yeah, that was great, Krista. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
And with that being said, this is a Longest Stride podcast. Peace.